From the Land de Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 12th day of May, 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vake. She's at Total Farm Marketing out of Hollister, Missouri. Drew Lerner will be here to take up the weather forecast from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. And we'll review this morning's numbers, not only from the United States Department of Agriculture, the WASDE, World Ag Supply and Demand Estimates, but also from CONAF. That's their USDA counterpart in Brazil. Both release supply and demand figures for their corn and soybean crops today.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, this morning, USDA released the WASDE World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates. It now shows ending stocks for the current year at 1.257 billion bushels for corn. They used the February outlook numbers for both yield and acreage for both corn and soybeans going into new crop. Production of new crop corn at 14.99 billion bushels carryout expected by the time that we get to the fall of 2022 at 1.5 billion with a cash price of $5.70. Keep that in your mind. Soybeans finish up with a cash price of $13.85 for the new crop on 140 million bushel carryout. And they raised carryout actually from 117 to 120 for the old crop. I gave you that 570 figure, by the way. Scott Irwin, University of Illinois, put a supply and demand table out for 21-22 as well. He used a lot of the numbers from USDA, but increased acreage and lowered yield by a bushel to the acre at 178.5. He comes out with a 1.432 billion carryout instead of 1.5, and he's using a $5 season's average cash price. I did check with USDA to see if that season's average cash price is a typo. It's not. July corn today settled at 714 and three quarters, 7.5 lower. September down 13.5 at 621.5, and December new crop at $5.93, 18 and a quarter lower. July soybeans were up 27 and three quarters of a cent, settled at $16.42.5, and November new crop at $14.43 and three quarters, up 12 and a quarter cents. Bean meal $1.80 higher. The bean oil up $1.60. July soft red winter wheat down 12 at 729 and three quarters, and the hard red at 695, 19 and three quarters of a cent lower. Live cattle futures were up 27.5 cents in the August at 122.32.5, the feeders at 136.75, $1.42.5 higher, and lean hogs at $112.25, 85 cents higher for the June contract. Jackie Vakes joins us from Total Farm Marketing out of Hollister, Missouri. Thank you for being here today, Jackie.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Let's start with this morning's USDA WASDE numbers. Of course, CONAB update the Brazilian numbers for corn and soybeans this morning as well. The folks at WASDE should have seen them. What did they find?
Well, it was pretty interesting all the way around. I mean, you know, today was the first time that we got 21-22 crop numbers, the estimates. And so when you look at the bigger picture, of course, you know, they're going to use trend line yield. There's no question about that. Okay, so on beans, we had 47.4. Well, the trend line yield, 50.2. Trend line yield is 50.8. And they use the 87.6 as far as acres go. When it comes to corn, 91.1 million acres, 179.5 for production. And so what that produced was a almost a 15 billion bushel potential crop, and therefore raised carryout from 1.257 to an estimated 1.507. The thing I think that's really interesting is even though stocks use ratio went from 8.5 to 10.2, price went from 435 on average to 570.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, that's pretty significant, you know, when you look at it. When it comes to the beans, of course, you know, they're estimating that we're going to have a higher production number there too. And same type of situation, even though they estimated that we have a carryout of 140 million for 21-22, they raised the average price from 11.25 to 13.85. On wheat, we saw the average price go from 505 to 650. So even though, you know, we saw the numbers get bigger, and the market wasn't thrilled with the corn number, there's no question about that. But part of that is because of the fact that when you look at the Brazil number, you mentioned that they updated the South American numbers. Brazil corn number came in at 102, which is lower than the average guesses, but the trade itself has been trading like below 100. And so now it's kind of making its adjustments as we go along. Argentina, they didn't change corn at all. And when it comes to beans, Argentina went down 500,000 metric tons, and they kept Brazil at 136 million metric tons. And so a very interesting report just in general is, you know, when you looked at the overall picture, everything's tight. There's no question about it. Any increases in world ending stocks were put there because of the increases that we saw projected for 21-22. And so, I'm glad we've got our first numbers out. That's a good thing. And I think the trade right now, and for the whole day, has been just trying to digest. You know, they're trying to figure out, have we gone high enough, to slow demand? Well, it doesn't appear to be that way at this point in time. And so, therefore, what do we need to do? I didn't see anything that destroyed any charts. Let's just put it that way, Todd.
Yeah, even on the CONAB numbers this morning, they left their export figure exactly where it was last month. So fairly interesting stuff. On the charts, what's high for December corn futures, by the way?
Well, from a historical standpoint, the all-time high came in at 849. I remember the day. It was August the 10th of 2012. And from June to August, we went up $3.27, and from August to expiration, we dropped $1.30 is what we did. Historically, when you look at November soybeans, the all-time high is 1789, and that was September 4th of 2012. So we had gone up $5.12 from June to September on beans, and then from September to expiration, we dropped $3.56. So there's a lot of volatility potential volatility there. And I'll talk about the same thing. I'm not ready to pull the trigger yet, but I'll tell you what, there's going to come a point in time here where I'm going to certainly recommend to my clients that we put some puts in place to protect our insurance dollars, because we are way above the insurance levels, and we don't know what's going to happen by the time that we get to October. And so we've got a lot of things that are going to happen in between. June acreage report could make a big difference, all of those types of things. So that'll be coming down the pike, too.
Yeah, so I know farmers only heard the 849 in that discussion on corn. So probably we should put into place here the things that we normally do, paying special attention to the resistance level. So what do support and resistance levels look like this week?
Well, on July, we've got support 683, resistance at 747, and a crossover at 720. September, 616, 732, and the crossover is actually at 732 also. On a December weekly chart, 605 with the resistance at 638, and the weekly crossover projects out to 667. On beans, you look at July, 1550, 1789. We heard that number just before, right? And the crossover is at 1555. I mean, we're getting to levels right now, Todd, that some of the next resistance levels are those old all-time highs. And so August 1403, resistance 1589, crossover 1591, and November weekly chart 1303, 1451. When we look at the Dow Jones, we have 30,925 for support, 35,091 for resistance, and a crossover is at 36,681. U.S. dollar, 88.25. 91.73. And I'll just go right on it to manage money. Because I wasn't able to be with you last week, I did go back and I brought these up to date so that I am comparing last week to this week. Soft red wheat, 16,000 long for managed money compared to four last week. Corn, 378,000 compared to 414 last week. Beans, 212 compared to 180. Soy meal, 62 compared to 50, and soy oil, 91 compared to 107. Very interesting. Everything is long, no matter how you look at it. And so you can see that they lightened up some on their corn positions. They expanded some on their bean positions. And so we did have export inspections this week. Wheat exports right now are running 1% ahead of a year ago, and the USDA is currently forecasting a 2% increase, and that's 1% is where we were last week, so we didn't have any change there. Corn, 79% ahead of a year ago. Last week was 82%. USDA has upped the seasonal number by 4%, so they're expecting that we should be 50% above a year ago when it comes to inspections. Beans, 62% on the year so far. Last week, they were 64%. USDA there increased the yearly forecast by 2%, saying that we should be 36% ahead of a year ago. So that's some significant changes going on. But you can see, you know, when you look at your export numbers, there's just so much in the mix as far as what's happening. And I guess depending upon the type of trader that a person is, you know, if let's say you're a speculator on the floor or you're whatever, boy, there's enough information to make you either tip one way or the other, you know. But the momentum is up at this point in time.
Any news of note out of China?
Well, yeah, some interesting news. I guess it's kind of goes along with what we always say, you know, you better be careful. The farm consultancy CoFeed, which just all of a sudden suspended operations. I mean, they didn't send any data to Refinity since April 29th, and nobody can get an answer why. They've been trying to call them. They can't find them. They started in 2002, and a lot of their data, I mean, it's key grains and oilseeds, so their numbers on everything were really important to all of us here and overseas. And so it's interesting because they were stopped right when everybody's really interested in what Chinese demand's going to be, right? And so they were operating from a villa in the northern outskirts of Beijing is what a person said who was familiar with it. And the doors at that address had been sealed by the police on April 29th. So things don't bode well for these guys. Let's just put it that way.
Out of Brazil, what's going on?
Oh, they have a bit of a mess. I tell you, they are in the worst drought in 20 years right now. And, you know, they're going to have to depend on thermal power plants probably to compensate because they basically are one of the highest using countries when it comes to percentage-wise of getting their power from water. And so about 3/4 of that country's electricity is generated by plants from water. And so this has just been a really terrible situation down there for the last 2 years. And they're already trying to make the adjustments. But what it's going to do, of course, is it's going to drive costs a lot higher. The interesting part in Brazil, and it's still, you know, the costs are going to go higher in the city because the government doesn't supply electricity to the farmer. They only supply electricity to the cities. When we were down there, it was just amazing. I mean, these big lines go overhead across these farms, but they can't get any power off of it. They have to generate their own. And so I think that's kind of interesting. But they're, you know, their rainy season, they had the least amount of rain from November to March in the last 20 years. And so this is nothing to laugh at, to be honest with you, because what it does is it causes the levels at the rivers and the levels where they load out to drop so much that a lot of times, you know, they have to go and only partially load and then load somewhere else. And what it does is it does make it better for us. There's no question about that. I mean, it would imply to me that we would be a more reliable supplier, perhaps. But the other thing in Brazil is the corn growers are already claiming insurance for their losses for the safrinha corn, and that's something that they haven't seen before. In Paraná, which was a state that Jeff and I actually went through, and that was the first state down in Brazil that started to raise corn and beans. They said there are places that haven't had any rain for 43 days. And so some of the cereal crops, they said, are just lost because they haven't received precipitation since germination. So this is a very, very difficult situation. And Argentina's in the same boat because Argentina depends a great deal on the water that comes down from Brazil and on the Paraná River and on the other rivers. And so this is just got to be very, very scary for them all the way around.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate you taking the time with us today.
Thank you, Todd. You have a great one.
You too. Jackie Vakes is with Total Farm Marketing. She's out of Hollister, Missouri. And her note, by the way, about electricity on the farm in parts of South America reminds me that early in the last century, mid-century probably, USDA produced a film called Power and the Land. It was about the Tennessee Valley Authority, but much more than that. And in fact, the opening scenes of that has a group of farmers looking up at the power lines that pass them by and wondering what to do about it. Tennessee Valley Authority, and more importantly, the electrification of rural America came about because it was the birthplace of electric cooperatives. On this Wednesday, let's check the weather forecast with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Good afternoon to you, Drew. Thanks for being here.
Good afternoon to you, too. Yeah, hopefully I will enjoy the afternoon. We've got some sunshine over this way. Hope you're doing the same. I think you are.
Oh, it is a beautiful, if a cool start to the day today. We'll talk more about that in just a bit. And I want to start, though, with where some of this heat may be building from. And I don't know whether this will drop into the Midwest, but I did see some numbers that looked like the places that we've been watching to the northwestern part of the Corn Belt and into the Canadian prairies might get a bit warmer. Can you tell me about weather conditions there?
Yeah, absolutely. The relative humidity up across Canada's prairies and the northern U.S. plains the past few afternoons has been running from 15 to 25%. Just really, really dry air. And you know, as well as I, that you know, when you get the air that dry, you can not only induce a lot of cold, but you can get really hot real quick as well. And this past week, we saw temperatures in the teens Fahrenheit across Canada's prairies. We got down to 20 degrees at Devil's Lake, North Dakota. I mean, it was cold. And now we're going to turn it around the other way. We've got a ridge of high pressure building up. We're going to see the temperatures push up into the 80s in portions of the Dakotas and Montana, as well as the prairies as we go forward. It'll take several days to get to this point, but maybe this weekend into the first half of next week, we're going to see a lot of heat and the wind is going to blow in those areas as well. And if we keep the humidity like it is, and I'm afraid we will, that's really going to worry a lot of folks. We'll probably blow around a little dust and we'll desiccate some of these very immature crops that are trying to come out of the ground. And so it could be a kind of a nasty period of time. The good news is there's two storm systems that may follow this period in the second week of the forecast and maybe bring those temperatures back down to a more reasonable level, quiet the wind a little bit. And maybe we can get some rain. The first storm system is probably not going to make it. It's probably going to run into all that dry air and just evaporate. The second system might do a little bit better, but now we're talking 10 days from now. And you might be a better gambler than I am, but I'm not of the mode here to put any money down on something that far out in the middle of a bad drought.
Yeah, I'm not. I am most assuredly not. So what happens in the rest of the Corn Belt as this heat builds into the Northwest?
Well, you know, we've got a lot more moisture in the Midwest. We've got a lot of rain coming up in this first week of the outlook. The humidity is going to be fine. We'll have plenty of moisture in the soil to feed back into the atmosphere as it warms up. So I think we'll see the temperatures come back into a more seasonable range, and we might even get a little warmer than normal for a brief period of time. But the humidity will be high enough to keep the lid on the can here, so to speak, and we won't get as hot as it will be in those dry areas in the northern plains and Canada's prairies. So from that perspective, I think we'll do fairly well. And really, the Midwest as a whole is in good shape today, and I think we're probably going to stay that way as we go forward through the 2 weeks coming up. A good mix of weather expected in most areas. The north may struggle for moisture in this first week of the outlook, but the second week might get a little bit more fruitful as we shift the jet stream to the north and maybe get a few showers and thunderstorms to pop up. But no, I don't think we'll see any excessive heat in the Midwest from this particular round.
The winter wheat growing regions from the southwest through parts of, I suppose, the Dakotas, how do they do?
Well, actually, over this first week of the outlook, we've got a couple of storm systems that are going to bring on rounds of rain. So it'll be plenty wet in hard red winter wheat country. There's a slight chance, I suppose, that we get out a week from now and it might still be raining in some of that area. And we could actually hear some folks complain a little bit that the quality of the crop may be in decline for maybe Oklahoma and some of the northern counties in Texas for the early maturing crop. But no one's going to complain in Kansas, I don't think. And certainly the moisture will be great for summer crops throughout all of that region. The Northern Plains, you know, they get caught up in that Canada issue, and there's not going to be a very good environment for wheat development. Certainly the winter crop in Montana and South Dakota did manage to get some moisture this past weekend, and that was really helpful. And the situation in those two areas is not nearly what it is in North Dakota. So North Dakota's spring wheat is still up for a lot of debate as to how well they will evolve as we go forward in time. And we'll just have to wait and see how we get along with that ridge of high pressure that's going to build up next week there.
Has there been any relief for the safrinha crop corn in South America, or will there be?
Well, actually, last night and early today, there were rain and thunderstorm activity reported all around Paraná, which back in the olden days had about 20% of the safrinha corn. I'm not quite sure where we are in the last year or two, but it's pretty important. And we saw amounts that ranged from about 3/10 of an inch to a full inch. It was right in some of the most important safrinha production area there in Paraná. So I do think that there was some relief that occurred. The rain and cloud cover is still lingering a little bit now, but it is coming to an end. There's not much other precipitation in Brazil's safrinha corn country. There hasn't been and there won't be any for at least the next 10 days. Most of that production area may see a few spits and spats of rain after this, but there's not going to be anything as well organized as what we saw last night. So a small portion of the crop has been relieved temporarily, but you know as well as I do, as long as it's been dry there, you know, picking up on 3/10 of an inch to an inch of moisture, was certainly going to help the crop while it's reproducing, but it's going to be gone in a 2 or 3 day period by evaporation and crop use. So without follow-up rain, I'm not quite sure how far we're going to go with that relief. And with the rest of the production area getting absolutely nothing, you know, the situation is still a little bit on the grim side for producers there.
And thank you so much for keeping us up to date. We'll talk with you again next week.
You bet. Have a good one.
You too. That's Drew Lerner. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.